iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobal Radio, brought to you by iGlobalNews.com.
Namaste, I'm Bhavin Pathak, and I'm delighted to be bringing the Sewa series on iGlobal. Today, I have the great pleasure of being joined by Ajay Chhabra. Now, Ajay is an actor, producer, culturepreneur, and the son of a partition survivor and the great-grandson of an indentured labourer. Born and raised in London, his curiosity with life and death and everything in between resulted in the creation of an award-winning outdoor performance company called Nutcut, which created with his partner Simi Gupta. He's an advisor to the Mayor of London and a board member of three national organizations encompassing festivals, engaging in soft power and cultural activism. He is a governor of the Commonwealth Foundation and covers the Europe region alongside his global colleagues. And Nutcut, which means mischief, creates festivals, digital artworks, and theatrical moments which bring people together under a single and universal experiences. I should also add that Ajay is a star of the upcoming movie, a Bollywood movie, Bell Bottom. Many of you will also be heard of the famous 83 movie based on the cricket team's victory in the World Cup, and Tom and Jerry, the movie, which also features Ajay. And just a small additional fact is I grew up watching Ajay on children's television as well. So Ajay, welcome to the Sewa series on iGlobal, and what a pleasure it is to have you joining me.
Namaste, Bhavin, and namaste to our listeners. Thank you so much for inviting me on to this series. It's an absolute pleasure.
Excellent, fantastic. And look, there's so much I want to talk about with you. I mean, we have a lot of these conversations, so but we're going to keep this fairly focused. I mean, tell us a little bit more about your upbringing and background, because it, you know, being the great-grandson of an indentured labourer and the son of a partition, by partition we mean the India-Pakistan partition survivor, and then here you are being born and raised in London. What was that all about, and how was that for you?
So my mother was born in Fiji and came with my grandmother and my two older sisters to a very dark and a very cold and a very dreary Southampton in December 1960. They'd been on the same boat for 3 months. They crossed two oceans. They'd sailed through the Panama Canal. And their expectations were one of coming to the mother country, as many immigrant families during that period did. And there's a shape to this, because it's almost the start of, you know, it is the start of a new decade. You know, there's a kind of swagger about London. And my mum was in her 20s. She was 20 years old. She was a single parent. She had two young daughters. And she was coming to this big, you know, global, you know, the epicenter of the Commonwealth, London at the time. So from Southampton,
that was in the 60s, was it then?
That was in December 1960.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Just under 2 years later, just before the government of the day in the mid 1962 introduced a Commonwealth Act, which restricted the number of people coming from former Commonwealth countries, my dad made it to London independently of my mum. So he didn't take a ship. He took a flight from Delhi and arrived in what was London Airport in the summer of 62. So it took the edge off for my dad. The weather was, you know, we always talk about the weather in England. And my mum came to she stepped foot off the jetty and it was freezing. My dad stepped foot off onto the tarmac, and it was warm.
When I heard the very sad news of your mother's passing, very, very sorry to hear that, and share the condolences once again. But from what you how you describe her, she was very playful, and shared that humor, that that laughter with the world as well. And in some ways, that's what you're doing with Nutcut. Even by definition, the name Nutcut is exactly that as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting, isn't it? How, you know, I never had, like many of us, I never had a master plan or a strategy or a game plan. You know, Nutcut happened because it needed to happen 20 years ago when we first kind of thought, let's make some work, but how can we describe what we want to convey? What's the emotion of the work? Well, we don't want it to be serious. There's absolutely no way. We want it to be too structured and rigid. Yeah. And what is it that we've grown up with, you know, in our faith, you know? So dad coming from an Arya Samaj root, and mum coming from a Sanatan Brahmin root, you know, the faith existed, you know, in our, you know, it was part and parcel in a light touch way, you know, it was always there. And so these words, Nutcut and others that we started to think about, hit the spot, you know, because we wanted a word that was meaningful, that was ancient,
yeah,
that was also, but also quite complicated. So my surname is Chhabra. You know, nobody, I mean, you except you, I mean, and many others, many other Indian fellow brothers and sisters, can pronounce it or spell it even. But but you know, so I'm always asked Chhabra. So that's always fun. I mean, I've had that my entire life, and that's fine. And also, there's something about we didn't ever want to make it too easy for anyone.
Oh, you know, really? Okay.
So Nutcut is a bit of a play on, you know, you have to get your, you know, some people can't even pronounce it, you know, because it's just a foreign word, you know, it's not part of their vocabulary or anything. So it makes people work hard, and then people kind of go, that's memorable. What does it mean? You know,
well, for me, immediately sort of, I suppose, it was familiar to me, and I had to reflect why, and it was because of Krishna, who was the original Nutcut, you know, the playful, mischievous child. And in a way, you're embracing that spirit of mischief in the creation of Nutcut, and in its title, and even in the expression of it as well.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And it was to find a way in one word to convey childlike, innocent playfulness and mischief. How do you capture all of that? You know, that beautiful, those beautiful moments when a child is just playing, either on their own or with their friends or members of their family, and that innocent silliness, you know, that innocent joy, that and that curiosity, you know, that, you know, and all of us, all cultures, all faiths, all people, you know, it's a universal experience of that child, the child in all of us. And so it's just taking that word and really investing that word into everything that we do.
Yes, yeah. And it's interesting that we're talking about, you know, the childlike mischief as well. Another thing I would say about children, being a father of three myself and having worked with children for a long time, is they have this inherent nature to be helpful as well, to be nice, to be kind. Of course, they also have the inherent nature to be not so nice to each other as well at times. But when they're really nice and kind, it's almost like as a lesson for us as adults as well. Which brings me on to my sort of next point, really, because you've been doing some, you know, the pandemic hit, you were affected by COVID, if you don't mind me saying so, mentioning, and now you're doing seva, and by that I mean the service through volunteering at these COVID test centers, leading the volunteering effort in terms of vaccinating and testing and other things. What motivated you? What inspired you to do that? Was it a case of I need to do something, or I suppose where did that inspiration for Save Our Service come from?
So I've always felt that if you can do something, you should do something, you know. And we all have different entry points, you know. If we're, you know, there might be people who have the inability to come forward and do seva, you know, because of an illness or some other lack of ability to step forward, you know, which often can be temporary, or it can, you know, be more permanent. I described earlier about how the pandemic started for us, and that start absolutely framed everything. And yet, as you quite rightly said, at the time that we lost our mother, I had layer upon layer of complexity. I had just come back from Mumbai, and within a few days I contracted COVID. And you know, many people who have suffered having had COVID, there is that feeling of, you know, you get to a point where you kind of go, I don't want this anymore. I can't do this, you know. And I almost got to that point, and I can, you know, sharing this with you now, I can almost remember myself thinking that. And when the phone call from my sister came, I mean, I was lying in bed, self-isolating, the family were downstairs and all the rest of it. On the Friday to say, mum's gone to hospital, I mentally prepared myself. And then the second phone call that came was, mum, we've lost mum.
Oh, dear.
So that shaped everything. And, you know, and obviously me in the middle of my, you know, COVID, and in the middle of lockdown, unable to go to the hospital, go to the ward, you know, unable to do what we as Hindus or children would do, you know, which is the natural thing to do, is come forward. So as a result of that, everything was shaped by that. I recovered, you know, physically, you know, and as many of us will recall, in the UK, specifically in the south, in London, the weather was really good for us for a change.
Yeah,
and
yeah, true.
You know, we as a family spent as much time as we could outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And it, off, you know, that kind of where the world kind of suddenly slowed down was exactly what we as a family needed. And I personally found
I think many people found that they needed that. Yeah, I think that would resonate with a lot of people.
And you know, I then started to coming from a family with a footprint in lots of different countries, you know, an Indian diaspora family, I started to use that opportunity to just, you know, share and can reconnect with lots of family members in lots of different countries, you know, from Fiji, Australia, New Zealand, India, Canada, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So we move forward now, we come into autumn, and things are not getting, you know, things are not improving. That this takes us into the end of the year and Christmas. And then I started to hear about these COVID test centres and connected, you know, with one conversation with one friend and then another and then another. And I realized that Southall, you know, the one of the oldest Punjabi Indian, North Indian communities in Europe, almost definitely in the UK, there was a COVID test center there, and I stepped forward and I said, I'd be really happy to run it, manage the team, keep an eye on things, you know, translate, you know, troubleshoot, firefight, you know, do what's necessary. And that's what I started doing. And that for me didn't feel like anything extraordinary. It just felt normal, you know. And at that time, you know, people would come in anxious and leave. And my mantra every morning was to say, people will come in anxious, they're confused, You know, yeah. English might be a second or third language. You know, they're not getting the information, or the information that they're hearing is not filtering through. You know, they might not understand some of the jargon. And our job is, they arrive anxious, and all we need to do is ensure that they leave calm. You know, in the 6 or 7 minutes, yes, they're in the space. You know, we don't rush them. You know, we are polite, we are calm, because if we are polite and calm, that behavior, that kind of tranquility or that calmness will then, you know, people feel it. People feel it, even in the silences.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So coming through that period then, Bhavan, I think for me, when I start, you know, and again, there's been no master plan, there's been no game plan. I have my entire life just almost done things where I feel instinctively right about doing it. I might sometimes get them wrong. I might sometimes some of those decisions might be wrong. I think, well, you know, I've got myself into this, but I work through it. And this is another example of that. I just I just felt it was the right thing to do. And what it's done on reflection, speaking to you now, I'm looking back on what the last 6 months or so has been. It's almost helped me really work through my grief. And I can give you an example of what that means, is because almost every day, somebody will come in who doesn't speak English fluently, mm-hmm, or is struggling. Okay. And they might need some support in how to book their vaccine. Now, we don't offer any of that service. Our service is to test them, you know, is to test members of the public who come in to test whether they have COVID or not. Mm-hmm. And it's also to support them in ensuring that they get a test result, which they can then show their employer or a teacher at school. So it gives it gives them access.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else is over and above, you know, our pay station or our pay grade or whatever the word is. You know, it's just not part of the protocol or the script.
So it's just purely testing and making sure they're tested, and that's it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the process, that's the protocol. But Southall is a place like no other. You know, it has people from all walks of life, mm-hmm, and it's not enough for us just to be what I've just described. So across the road is a you know, and I think we're quite lucky being in Southall, because there are three places, there are three centres. We've got an asymptomatic, so if you don't show symptoms, and we've got a symptoms test centre, and we've got a vaccination hub, you know, mm-hmm, which at its height was doing, you know, 1,000, 1,500 a day vaccines. It was really, really, really well resourced and busy.
Mm-hmm.
So just to say that, you know, stepping up, going over, you know, doing more than we need to was in a way for me to work through my grief. And that was to, so, you know, people come in every day, you know, confused about a vaccine. I'll make sure we dial the number. You know, I'll take my phone out, I'll dial the 119, which is the kind of vaccine service number, and get them an appointment, you know, take their permission that I'm using, you know, I'm going to be sharing their data, put them on loudspeaker with the operative. And, mm-hmm, you know, within 10 minutes, you know, they get what they need done, you know, which, right, and it's something that might not have happened so quickly. So there's lots of little things like this, I think, that have, you know, where we have been of some support to the community. You know, we're offering a wider, and none of this appears on the news, or, you know, none of this kind of stuff goes missing. And there are thousands of people all over the country, exactly, I imagine, doing the same.
It's not just a simple case of somebody comes, gets tested, leaves. There's so many nuances to each individual. There's a story to each of them. Somebody who's just coming casually, somebody who's got some sort of anxiety associated with the whole testing, or the reason they're testing and what they need the result for, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I remember when we had this whole program with York Foundation, and very early on in the year, where there was a drive for vaccinating, you know, the BAME and particularly our Indian community, it was exactly that. I was getting phone calls from people who had so much anxiety because someone in their family had passed away from COVID, and they're worried that they may have a genetic disposition to it, so they wanted to be vaccinated. So I think, and so I really kind of understand that, that being exposed to that and seeing that and witnessing it and directly being involved in it, I suppose, at these test centers, that you're becoming part of these stories, as it were. And the story is an interesting word that kind of comes to mind here, because as you said, you know, for that period that somebody comes to the test center for that, it may be 6-7 minutes or so, your job and your and your volunteer colleague's job is to keep them calm and you know, make sure even if they're arriving in a state of anxiety or panic or concern or worry, that they're leaving in a state of calm. And in a way, I wonder if it's any different to, well, of course it is different, but in some way similar to the, you know, theatre and show and TV, where there is that set amount of time where you have the audience there and you need to create an experience for them in that moment.
Yes, yeah, I think that's an interesting analogy. I think, you know, that idea of the front of house, you know, the first point of entry in any public building needs to be warm and welcoming. Mm-hmm. So even before I was introduced to theatre and began working in the arts, I worked in the hospitality industry. You know, that I was going to become a hotel manager, you know. Mm-hmm. I went to university, did hotel management, you know, and mm-hmm. some people are a bit shocked. Is there such a thing? You know, yes, there is, you know. And I had some, you know, in my late teens and my up until my sort of mid to late 20s, I had a, you know, it was just incredible. You know, I worked in, you know, like really plush hotels. I'd spent a year in Austria, and I found, you know, for me, the big thing is front of house, you know, the kind of putting on a show, you know, mm-hmm. you know, making the minute people step over the threshold is you want to make them feel they are special. They're in the spotlight and, you know, they'll be taken care of, you know, that, you know, nothing's going to be a problem. Everything's going to be fine. So there's a little bit of that goes on, you know, I think, you know, and also sticking to the script. What we don't, you know, there's a bit, you know, within, you know, it's organized chaos. I often, you know, with some of the work that I do now in theatre, where on the outset, it can, you know, people think, oh, how did that happen? And comedy is all about the timing, you know, and often, you know, when you make it look natural, then it works. Mm. You know, then it works best. But often naturalism comes with a sense of structure, you know, in the middle of that. So there's something about the warm welcome. There's something about protocol and script. And mm-hmm. then there's something about, you know, warmth and kindness. You know, we want people to leave with a feeling. I mean, we, you know, this mantra of you want to know how people feel about you, you know, what's that feeling? And I think if they can leave with a feeling of that was a nice experience. And, you know, often we find that anxiety doesn't come in, you know, in one shape or form. No. Anxiety can come through somebody being very quiet and calm. And you know, these telltale signs that, you know, we think we know, you know, aren't always that prevalent. So it's, I think sensitivity, you know, this kind of heightened awareness. And I think as actors, you know, I often say to the team, as actors, we, you know, have a high, you know, in some ways, you know, there's a heightened sense of awareness. You've got to know what's going on around you. You've got to know what objects are on stage. You know, you've got to know what's going to happen next or what came before to find where you've got to be in the play. So there's this kind of super awareness, you know, all your senses are kind of tuned in. And I think there's an element of that in the healthcare, you know, in this kind of healthcare world that many of us have found ourselves in, having this kind of heightened sense of awareness of somebody else's need or needs is really important.
And many would say that's the basis of seva. being acutely aware of the other's needs and serving those. And that is so, I mean, I must say, Ajay, that's amazing work and service that you're doing at this most, you know, profound times of the pandemic, and helping those in need on an entirely voluntary basis, and inspiring others as well. But you touched on actors, and I think this conversation with a couple of minutes that we've got left wouldn't be complete without asking you about Bell Bottom, which hasn't quite hit the screens yet, but it will be soon, I'm guessing. How's that whole experience of filming with big banner stars such as Akshay Kumar and Lara Dutta, and in Scotland as well? I mean, you're no stranger to big banner productions, but I mean, this was Bollywood, wasn't it?
Yeah. So this was a film that was shot in Scotland and in the UK and in India last summer. So mm-hmm. it was the first film that started shooting after lockdown in India.
Right. Okay.
And Akshay and his team chartered an aeroplane, the entire cast and crew, and probably 350 suitcases. And I took a picture of all those suitcases full of costumes, props and other things, you know. Mm-hmm. Came to Glasgow last summer and filmed on location in and around Glasgow. And I think, you know, there's a growing trend, as many listeners will know, that the Scottish government have been really welcoming to Indian filmmakers.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. made it very possible through financial incentives, you know.
Right.
Scotland has been, you know, has welcomed Hollywood for many, many, many years, for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, the locations are beautiful, the countryside is incredible.
Exactly.
So mm-hmm. so we were shooting in Glasgow, and Akshay's team all came together, you know, all the entire crew, the entire cast. And that was an interesting experience because they all had to self-isolate in a hotel which was entirely dedicated to the cast and crew for 2 weeks. I didn't have to because I live in London, so
yeah,
I got on
yeah.
a plane from London to Glasgow. So I met the cast and crew at the end of that fortnight of them self-isolating, and then we went straight into a week's or two's worth of shooting. Mm. And it was amazing. I mean, I always feel it's a privilege and an honor to be doing what I do, and I'm a small piece of the jigsaw in a big machine, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible to be able to be on the outside, you know, looking in. And my first introduction to Bollywood was at the age of 5, when mm-hmm. I first set foot on a film set. My cousin worked as an assistant director for the great Prakash Mehra.
Okay, right.
And, you know, was involved, you know, assisted him on all of his films throughout the 70s and early 80s. Mukaddar Ka Sikandar. You know, Lawaris, you know, just so much stuff. So the magic of Bollywood, you know, I'm a big fan, you know. So it was an honour and a privilege to be involved in that film. And the film is set in the early 80s, and Akshay is the lead. And mm-hmm. There are flashback moments to, and a lot of it takes place in Rashtrapati Bhavan, you know, the home of the Prime Minister and the President of India. So Indira yeah. Gandhi at the time had an office there, and Lara plays Indira Gandhi.
And you play Venkataraman, right?
Yeah, so I play a defence minister that's trying his best to give the best advice, you know. And I think defense ministers always end up in any controversial government, you know, being the kind of fall guy. you know, because they never quite get it right. But I think the interesting thing about Indira Gandhi's cabinet was that she chose and picked people from that were representative from, you know, all of India. You know, so Venkat Raman is a South Indian.
South Indian, yeah.
And so the actors also reflected a kind of rainbow, you know, cabinet. So that you know, a nation, you know, the size of India, that there were opinions and views that came from different parts of the country. So yes, so it was an amazing, you know, beautiful experience.
Yeah, I'm sure. Very much looking forward to that hitting the screens. And it seems like it was a bit of a light-hearted movie with some history there and a lot of costume. I suppose the name gives it away as well. So let's see once that hits the screens, and I'm sure it'd be a big hit. Listen, Ajay, I think this has been a fantastic conversation. There's so much I want to sort of expand on and talk more about, but we'll have to leave it there. I've very much enjoyed this conversation. Hopefully we can do it again sometime. I mean, we do all the time, but in this context for iGlobal Sewa series, it would be great if we could do this again in the future. And it remains for me to say thank you once again, and really wish you all the best with all the things you're doing, because there's so much you are doing, whether it's, you know, volunteering and service, but also on the arts and culture circuit as well, and also in a way embodying and representing, you know, the British Indian interest in stage theatre, the arts and culture as well. There's so much you're doing that we haven't talked about or even touched upon in terms of the work with the Mayor of London and the Commonwealth Association. So there's tons you're doing. So we will have this conversation again. Thank you, and you know, all the best with all those very sterling endeavours.
Thank you so much, Bhavan. It's been a pleasure just to be able to freely just talk about subjects which are close to our hearts. And yes, you're right. You know, we do get the opportunity to talk quite freely. And I think I'd encourage that. I'd always encourage that, you know, and I'd say to our viewers, you know, that, you know, it only works when we work together, you know, and when these conversations can flow in and out, you know, from sideways, you know, they really then, they become meaningful, you know.
They do.
And so it's been a pleasure. Thank you. And I would be more than happy to come back.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I've been Bhavan Patak from York Foundation. And this was the Sewa series conversation between myself and Ajay Chhabra.
iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.